Okay, welcome everybody. This is Micha Sifri from Personal Democracy Forum, your host for the PDF Network conference calls, which are brought to you by our sponsors AT&T and the Bivings Group, for whom we are very thankful. And today we've got a really exciting guest and topic. Steve Grove, the political director for YouTube, is going to be talking with us for the next hour about politicians and campaigns on YouTube, what's working. And I just want to say, if you are listening to the call and your name is not Steve Grove, please remember to mute your phone, either *6 or just hit mute. We appreciate it. So just a few words of framing here. I think it's kind of important to remember that 4 years ago, YouTube didn't exist. And in the last election, just to give you a sense of the magnitude of what's going on here, I think I was just looking on online at some numbers. Approximately 150 million views of videos made by either the Barack Obama campaign or the John McCain campaign, which if you try to put that in financial terms, the cost of reaching that many people in a mid-sized city, if you were buying TV time, would probably be somewhere in the range of $60 or $70 million. All of this attention that campaigns and causes are now capable of obtaining basically for free, thanks to YouTube's video sharing services. And, you know, things have really come a long way. And how this is affecting politics, how this is changing the economics of campaigning and governance. Really, these are all really huge and exciting subjects. What Steve's going to do, and I'm going to really shut up for a while and let him walk us through, is describe for us how politicians are now using YouTube and what kinds of services have been developed to really address the particular needs that both elected officials have and that nonprofits have in using, you know, creating their own YouTube channels and also making use of the kinds of metrics that a YouTube producer can get when they host a channel and sort of can track their own audience. So lots of good stuff to talk about today. As usual, our format is for the first half of the hour, where mostly it's just going to be Steve and then Steve and I talking. If you have a question during that period, use the chat to post your question. And then second half of the hour, we'll be opening it up for people to get on the line and discuss directly with Steve. Okay, Steve, it's all yours.
Great. Well, thanks, Micha, and thanks everybody else for dialing in. It's exciting to be here, and it's exciting to partner with the PDF Network on this. It's such a neat thing that Micha and his team are doing over here to get a lot of people together to learn from each other, and we're excited even more for next week, the conference in New York, to see many of you hopefully there to learn about all the amazing things that are really happening right now online, both in government and politics and in news. And I'd be remiss not to mention, just for a brief moment, the role that YouTube's playing in the news right now with what's happening over in Iran. It's been, you know, phenomenally remarkable few weeks here at the company, as we've seen essentially YouTube constitute the only video window into what's taking place over in Tehran, and has really, I think, changed the way a lot of people have been thinking about the Internet as a news source. You know, we've taken that responsibility pretty seriously, and that a lot of the footage we're seeing is really graphic, but it's coming out of the site in droves and getting millions and millions of views. I think just what's interesting at it, and maybe even just within the context of this conversation about politics, is that it's moments like these, like the protests taking place in Iran, that really highlight the grassroots and open-ended nature of platforms like YouTube. I mean, we never set out to be a news bureau for protesters in Iran. We never set out to be a campaigning tool for politicians to reach new audiences or for voters to hold their candidates accountable. But when new technologies emerge, people find ways to use them, and it's always the grassroots and user-generated iterations of these technologies that take off first. And in politics, we saw that way back in 2006, during the midterm elections, and I'm sure most people on this call remember George Allen's infamous macaca moment that around here at YouTube we sort of call the birth of YouTube politics. It was that first sort of gotcha moment in politics that really brought YouTube as a tool to the national prominence, and it was because essentially a politician got caught saying something they didn't want to be caught saying. But, you know, since that moment we've seen candidates and nonprofit groups and advocacy organizations all realize that, look, the audience for politics and the conversation about public life is taking place online. There are millions of people there having that discussion and informing their opinions about what we should do in our country and in our world. And if you're not on that platforming and engaging with people directly, you're sort of out of the conversation. So the frame of this short presentation here is just from a political campaigner's standpoint, from an issue campaign standpoint, even frankly from a nonprofit standpoint, how can you use YouTube for your campaigns? This is very much a how-to focused slice at looking at YouTube, and some of these lessons apply really to any types of footage, but we've tried to take this through the political lens to look at what are really the best ways to try to find your audience on the site. So before we get started on some of the basic how-to stuff, I just wanted to say something up top about who the heck is even on YouTube, right? Sometimes we get the impression from folks that, oh, YouTube's sort of like a kiddo site where a bunch of teenagers are watching dogs on skateboards or something, which, of course, is true. I mean, there are a lot of funny videos there, and a lot of young kids do like to use the site. But if you actually really peel back the demographics of YouTube, you see that we essentially mirror broadband penetration in the U.S. So, you know, 20% of our users are under 18, but 20% are also over 55. And so really you're talking about reaching essentially the national population with your videos, skewing slightly male and slightly white due to broadband access issues. And then just the scope of YouTube I think is worth mentioning, and in some ways it's pretty daunting. In 1 minute, 20 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube. Every day hundreds of millions of videos are viewed. And everyone on this call, I'm sure, has spent a decent amount of time on YouTube and understands essentially that it's a chaotic place. I mean, there is a lot of stuff out there. How do you rise above that? How do you make sure that your content filters through all of that video being uploaded to YouTube and reaches the right eyeballs and helps you achieve your goals in politics or in advocacy? So I'm going to go through 10 quick tips on how to use YouTube for your campaign. And then we'll do a quick case study that I received from a friend on Capitol Hill who's had some great experience using YouTube there in Washington, D.C. So the first thing about how to use YouTube for your campaign is very basic, but it's just you need to start building an audience. And the most important thing to build an audience is just to start uploading videos. To put just one video on YouTube and expect it to grow a whole new audience for you is probably thinking too small. Getting a steady stream of content onto YouTube is really important. And consider in a campaign or an issue-focused campaign, just getting like a daily diary of what's taking place. Doesn't have to be long, doesn't have to be super involved, but just keeping people engaged on a daily basis with video is really important. And the reason that is that people subscribe to your YouTube channel. And so every time you post a new video, it ends up in their inbox on YouTube. And if you make sure that you're continuing to stay in their inbox, you're hitting them more and more times with more and more footage, and you're building an audience as that footage spreads across the site and they share it with their friends. One note just on how to strategize posting of your videos, it's better to post one video a day for 7 days than 7 videos on one day. So that sort of steady, consistent stream is really important to start building an audience. Second tip, optimize your videos. So this is a really, really important concept. How do you actually optimize your videos to make sure that people can find them when they search? So much of our traffic on YouTube comes from people landing on YouTube.com and then searching right away for stuff they're interested in. So some things to consider here. Get a great title. People look at titles and it makes them want to click on the video. Wrap your video in really rich metadata. So the video descriptions, the tag words, the title also counts as metadata. Those textual cues are what lead people to your video. the challenge with video search, and it's why we continue to try to work to improve YouTube search, is that you're dealing with images, which are harder to find. And so we've got the best engineers we can muster over here at Google figuring out image search for us, but that's a whole new search challenge for our company. So getting rich tech around video is really important. Another way to optimize your videos is just by syndicating them. Make sure you enable embeds. Suggest other people on the internet that align with you to embed your videos. Of course, use Facebook and Twitter. In terms of when you should upload your video, the peak hours for watching video are 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. In any time zone, right? So think about where your audience is, which time zone they are, and hit that window if you can. A lot of people take a video lunch break and check out videos on YouTube. This just seems to be our kind of peak window.
Not nighttime, Steve?
No, I mean, the traffic doesn't drop off at night. I mean, we're not talking about a major peak, but the highest point in the graph is at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. I mean, I guess you should know your audience, right? If your audience, you reckon, is watching video at night, then you should adjust accordingly. But just as a slight aggregate whole, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. is our peak. Another way to optimize your video is just ensure that you just have one message per video. A lot of people try to cram, you know, a large update into one video, and that doesn't optimize your video for being as accessible and findable. So take one message, put it in one video, split them up if you need to, and if people are searching for one particular type of content, they're going to find it. Keep it short. I think that's pretty basic. Most people know that 2 to 3 minutes is about the right length for a YouTube video, if not even less. And then the last point, and this is, I think, really important in politics, is just get it up there fast, especially if your video is something to do with a timely issue, something that's happening in the public discussion right now. People are going to come to search YouTube to search for it, and if you're up first, you have a better chance of getting to the top of the search results. YouTube is actually the number 2 search bar in the Internet now. We've surpassed even Yahoo overall as for number of queries per day. So you want to get up there first so you can find your way onto people's search results pages. Number 3 is network the site. So go out there and find fellow people on YouTube who resonate with your cause, who are interested in what you're up to, and talk to them. Send them emails, put comments on their videos, subscribe to them. A great example of this is that Michael Steele, the RNC chairman a few weeks back, found a YouTuber who had posted a video that described what the national debt looked like visually by using stacks and stacks of pennies. It was a great user-generated video, really kind of brought the idea of what our deficit is looking like right now to a really visual and practical place with video. And so Chairman Steele reached out to that YouTuber with a video, uploaded his reply video to his, and even invited the video maker to Washington to come visit him at the RNC headquarters. So, I mean, I think that's an example of very heavily networking. But even just something like leaving comments on supporters' videos starts to build you an audience. Essentially showing people that you're not just using YouTube as a distribution platform, but that you're an engaged member of the site. Number 4, target your audience. So those of you on the call who have a YouTube channel might know about our Insight tool. This is essentially our data backend for YouTube. Every single user has it. If you go to your channel and look at my videos and start clicking on the Insight button for each video, you can find out some fascinating information about who's watching your video and from where they're finding it. So we had demographic information on sex, on state, and on age. And then we also have information on if people are finding your videos through embed, through which blogs they're finding it. And it helps you essentially understand, is your strategy working? And if not, how can you change it? You might have a video on, you know, healthcare that you want to hit up, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds for some reason, but you find out that actually everyone who's watching your video is a 45 to 54-year-old man or something. So you can get some good data. You can adjust your approach along the way. It takes about 24 hours for this data to populate, so it's not available right away. We need a window to aggregate it. But definitely check this out for every video to see if you're achieving.
Steve, I have to interrupt you and ask a question. How does YouTube figure out the demographics of people watching your video?
So we use the information that users type in when they sign up for an account. So everyone has to be over 13, and they have to list their age and their sex and their location. So we use that information to determine who's watching. Number five, test your message. So YouTube's, looking back to YouTube's rise, actually, as the video site that it's become, one of the reasons that YouTube became so successful early on is we thought about, or our founders rather, thought about video in a very interactive way. There were a lot of video sites out there vying for attention when YouTube was founded, but YouTube's very interactive and social features made it really a community and helped it take off. So think about using comments and video responses as feedback for your videos. Get a sense for what kind of messages you're sending out, what you're hearing back. You can almost have a little miniature focus group on YouTube with all the social features, with rankings and video responses and comments, etc. Use that to your advantage to figure out how your message and how your candidate's playing out. Number six, think about actually running a program. Now, this is one that I wouldn't suggest to everyone. You don't necessarily have to run a focused programmatic initiative on YouTube, but we're certainly well-suited to do that. Not only can you just post a video and ask voters to submit ideas or questions or solicit feedback, but you can also use other tools on the Internet along with YouTube. One of the ones that we recommend is Google Moderator, which is this platform that you can find at google.com/moderator, which looks and feels a little bit like Dig, but it's more focused on sort of question and answer and discussion, so people can submit ideas or questions or suggestions and then vote them up or down based on which ones they like the most. And then your candidate or your authority figure or your guest can look at the top 3, 5, 6, 7, whatever, and answer them directly with a YouTube video. This is the same platform that the president used during his Open for Questions online town hall a little while back. And it's extremely effective at weeding out spam, at weeding out profanity, et cetera. It uses a lot of the same filters that Gmail and other Google tools use. And, it's a work in progress as a new tool, and I think it's really an exciting way to engage people with your video. Number seven, when all else fails, you can pay for promotion. You can find your way to the tops of YouTube search pages by essentially treating us like you'd use Google AdWords or AdSense. And, you know, this is a really good idea, I think, no matter how your video is doing. And it's frankly pretty cheap yet because it's a new product. But you can go to youtube.com/advertising and find out how to promote your video in the right-hand columns of search results on terms that you think users would type to find your content. This is a really smart tool for people who know exactly what people might be searching for, have a very focused issue message, and want to use video to get their message out.
Do you pay per click, or do you pay just for impressions?
You pay for impressions. I think it's you pay per click. It's just like AdSense.
And can you narrow cast it the way you can with AdSense per particular?
Yeah.
So if you were just trying to get people in a particular congressional district or a state or whatever, you don't care about everywhere else. You could narrow cast.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't, if you're running for Congress in Tennessee, you don't care if it lands in Minnesota. You can let our system know that, and it'll only surface on IP addresses coming out of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tennessee, I guess, in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can narrowcast it, which is really important. The other thing that you can do, and this is tip number eight, and this is just launching actually next Monday. And so I'll post more information on this soon and maybe send it to Mika so you can update the blog over there at Tech President on this. But we're adding to that promote your video ad opportunity the ability to actually drive traffic off of YouTube. We've tested this out, in this case with Senator Leahy, and it's worked really well. Essentially, it's an in-video overlay. You can see in the bottom of both of those videos a slight sort of shaded graphical unit. If you click on those units, you go off of YouTube to some other page, and that could be to sign a petition, to donate money. The big idea here is that you use video to inspire people to do something, and then you give them something very directly to do. So the way that we're doing this in the political realm is if you buy those promote your video units that I showed you in slide 10, then you automatically get this this overlay as well for free, kind of as an addition to your PYV spend. And it's a great way to drive traffic. If anybody on the call is from a nonprofit, this is actually a free feature we give to every nonprofit. That video you see on the bottom is from a group called Charity Water, who posted this video on World Water Day with an overlay on it to drive traffic to a donation page, and actually earned $10,000 a day just from the YouTube video click-through. So if you have the right piece of media and the right campaign and the right timing, you can use this really effectively. I did want to put this up here because we launched it on Monday as our new video volunteers platform. This is for nonprofits, so I'm assuming there might be a few folks in line who are from nonprofit organizations. Go to youtube.com/video volunteers to learn more. The basic idea is you can go here and post an opportunity for someone else to help you make a video, and then they can come here and pick up that opportunity and go out and make the piece. So, you know, we've seen in the nonprofit sector a lot of times nonprofits don't have the resources to make good videos, they don't have the money or the time, and they might not even really have the audience. But there are so many YouTube users who have audiences that actually rival TV networks. I mean, we're talking about millions of subscribers, and if they make a video for you, then they can really get your message out there to a large, large online audience. So go there and check it out. We just launched this on Monday. We're really excited about it. It's for nonprofits. If you're not a nonprofit, though, I mean, this is something you can do sort of on your own. I'd suggest any political campaign who wants some help on YouTube making content to just troll the site and find people who have an audience and you think might resonate with your issue and hit them up through our mail system and see if you can get some help. And then the last point I just wanted to drive home before going through this quick Capitol Hill case study that I think might be interesting is just to stay consistently engaged. I think being on YouTube is something that you're joining a community, I think, is the point really to make. And if you're not engaged in that community consistently, you do get real drop-off. And I've seen this in my own personal use of YouTube, that when I'm consistently uploading videos involved, then I'm seeing my view counts really rise. But if I drop off, you know, for a couple of months and then come back on, there's hardly anybody there watching. So staying really consistently engaged, uploading a lot of video along the way, not stressing about having that video have to be, you know, super high quality every single time, but just having it be you know, a part of the discussion is really important. So let me hop into a quick case. I actually just threw this together this morning with some help from Karina Newton, a friend over at Nancy Pelosi's office, who's had some great experience with using YouTube on Capitol Hill. I'm not sure if anybody who's dialed in here actually is dialing in from the Hill, but what's working on Capitol Hill is an interesting look at what can work for any political situation. The case study here is just looking at how the House has used YouTube. We launched the YouTube House and Senate Hub about 3 or 4 months ago at youtube.com/House Hub and /Senate Hub. And basically, it's a place where you can find all of the content and channels from different members of Congress. And we have about 2/3 of the House on and about 3/4 of the Senate on. And it's been very interesting to see what succeeds and what doesn't since we launched these hubs. The first thing we're finding is that there's actually a lot of video views for some of the most, you might consider, mundane and boring footage, right? Clips from C-SPAN and clips of just like Capitol Hill hearings get huge audiences. You can't see it on the slide very well, but that video of Alan Grayson has 853,000 views. And that video of Representative Stupak, which was uploaded I think a day and a half ago, already has 21,000. And the reason is that this content is really timely and relevant, and the people on the Hill are getting it up quickly. So that, you know, when we're talking about the Federal Reserve and people are coming to search for it and this content's up there right away, people are finding it, and then if it's an issue they're passionate about, they're spreading it around and growing an audience. So being timely and being relevant really matters here. The second thing that seems to be working pretty interestingly, and I think has helped bring some legitimacy to Congress using YouTube, because you can imagine that Congress using YouTube is sort of a, oh, wait, would this actually work kind of phenomenon. But a lot of congressmen are going out there and being their own citizen reporters, filming their experiences when they go out in the field, like this video of Representative Steve Israel out in Afghanistan. He took his flip cam with him and shot some video from the road. The other video there is from a freshman congressman who is giving people a sense of his life inside Capitol Hill. If you look closely, you can see he's unloading a cot there where he's taken a nap in his office in between legislative sessions. So giving people a feel for what takes place inside the Hill with video is a neat kind of behind-the-scenes technique that I think makes your video strategy look a little bit more legitimate and sort of consistent with the YouTube experience. And the last thing is just, you can use video in so many ways, and a lot of people on Capitol Hill use video in press releases. So this is an example of a press release from Charlie Rangel's office. And, you know, throughout the press release, three different YouTube links really driving home the point for the press. And I think this is important because, you know, bloggers and press are always looking for something to embed, a visual to show something that's taking place. And using a YouTube video within that or within emails that you send out can really, I think, bring a new and more compelling vision of your message to the press and to people who are following your activity. So that's all I have for the presentation. Just as a quick note, you can sort of stay on top of a lot of what's taking place in this area on YouTube by checking out our news and politics blog, which is at www.citizentube.com.
Great, Steve. Thank you. Let me jump in first. I see there are a couple of specific questions that people have posted in the chat. One from Mark Ross: who is the contact for volunteer outreach at YouTube? Would that be you or?
Yeah. Well, you can always email me. I'm grove@youtube.com. But then our nonprofits and activism manager is actually Ramya Raghavan, and her email is rraghavan@youtube.com. So Ramya, I guess I could type that in the chat so people can see it, but that's the person to reach out to about nonprofit stuff on YouTube.
Okay, and then David Baker's question: can you get the drive action overlay without buying the PYV and instead just buying the overlay?
No, you have to buy them as a package.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, I think that just you can consider that you're buying an overlay and getting PYV for free, and, you know. Just one price.
Right. Got it. So I have a couple of questions, and then we're going to open it up. One is what tools, you know, you mentioned you've got to keep, you know, stay focused, right? And if you're going to really adopt YouTube as one of your primary platforms, you can't neglect it. Are there, other than the site itself, what kinds of tools, how would you recommend to people that, how do they keep track of what's happening? Not just with their own channel, right? Because obviously the Insight tool enables you to see your own traffic, but, how do you recommend people keep an eye on what's bubbling on YouTube, how other people are doing? I mean, are there good third-party tools that have been sort of developed around it, the way, you know, obviously there are all these crazy tools around Twitter or, you know, what do you recommend?
Yeah, good question. I recommend a couple of things. One, I just recommend you subscribe to both the YouTube blog and the CitizenTube blog to see what's trending there. And the YouTube blog also just will keep you updated on product developments, which I think is important. Second, I mean, I think what we're finding actually, it's interesting with what's taking place in Iran right now is like, figuring out what your most effective search terms are for your issue and the right filters are, and then just checking in once a day on what the conversation looks like. So, you know, in the case of Iran right now, we're finding that when we type in Tehran plus uploaded today plus most recent, we're finding all the footage that meets our use case for keeping track of what's taking place there. And then a few other key terms for us have been like Basij and protest.
And can you turn that search into an RSS feed or like, you know?
Yeah, you can. I don't think you can. I think you can create an RSS feed for the search term. I think the filter is something you have to go and actually apply. So like sorting by most recent, that you have to actually go to the site and apply.
Right.
But I think staying on top of that search term for your candidate or your issue is really smart. And then there are some third-party tools that are helpful. I think TubeMogul is probably the most widely used. TubeMogul.com, M-O-G-U-L.
Yep, we have long been friends of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, you all used it during the campaign in a way to track video views of presidential candidates, but there's a lot more rich tools than just sort of views of channels that I'd recommend taking a look at.
Is there anything like, you know, with Google Trends, right, you can subscribe and see what search terms are hot in general in Google search.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that just for YouTube?
There isn't, but we've talked about it a lot recently. So I would stay tuned. I think that's probably something that could be developing on the site really soon. The other thing that you should do is check out and bookmark our news page on YouTube, youtube.com/news.
Mm-hmm.
And we aggregate the top rising news videos from partners indexed against Google News searches. But we also, on that page, show what the most viewed videos of the day are that are tagged news and politics. So most people do search on YouTube, but you'd be surprised that you can find when you actually browse. So go on youtube.com/news, and browsing by most popular, most commented, or most viewed will help give you kind of like the zeitgeist window into what's rising that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a question here from Jordan Rayner. How does the YouTube ad network differentiate between AdWords video ads? Will both be able to run on YouTube? Jordan,
AdWords video ads.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, Jordan. Do you want to add more to your question, or?
I think what he might be saying is like the overlay that. Jordan, are you on? You want to unmute and just.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe he means the overlays on right. videos in the lower one third. So we have two different kinds of ad serving systems. One is, well, we have actually several, but I think the two related AdWords. One is the companion ads that end up in the right half of videos, and those we just serve straight from Google. So that is an agreement with Google that we have to help serve videos or AdWords against YouTube videos. The AdWord videos in the lower one-third of videos are bought through youtube.com/advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yeah, oh, here's what the question is. Oh, can you not, yeah, and you also can run video ads with the Google Content Network. So you can actually get your video not just on, you know, the promote your video slots on the right on YouTube, but also throughout GCN or the Google
mm-hmm.
Content Network.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff, there's great, great descriptions of that at youtube.com/advertising, so definitely take a look.
Okay. And then a question from Mark Ross. Looking at the 2010 elections, do you see more opportunities for political debates at the state level, U.S. Senate, governor? Obviously, there was just that debate in Virginia, right? I mean, where do you see that going?
Yeah. So we did a debate with the Politico and WJLA with the primary Democratic primary candidates in Virginia a few weeks back. It actually wasn't a debate. It was more like an interview, and questions were submitted on YouTube and on Google Moderator. We really think that debates are changing in a major way, and I think the primaries demonstrated that last year, as did the general election. I don't think you're going to see the same types of presidential debates in 2012. I think in 2010 we have the opportunity to sort of prove out new models of this, and one of them is using, I think, that Google Moderator tool to help submit and vote up questions to the top. But I think the other is actually political debates don't have to just be, you know, TV-only events. And I think the Internet allows us to take these really important dialogues programming that brings candidates together and stretch it out over time and place online. And so I think that this is going to change a lot. We're going to continue to push forward the tools that we have as a good model for this, and I know others will as well. But I feel like 08 really kind of it brought people to realize that there's actually a lot better way to do debates, and that the sort of moderator as king model, I think, is going to continue to be relaxed a little bit. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I should throw in a plug for those people who are coming to the conference next week. Monday night, there will be a Birds of a Feather session on that very topic, or around partly anyway, this question of opening up debates and press conferences and so on to more public input. And obviously, you know, it's very cool that you were able to get that to happen in Virginia. We're actually just past the halfway point here, but I'm going to invite people who are listening in who want to unmute their phones and ask a question or make a comment. You're free to do so now. Just please keep it to a reasonable length. Tell us who you are, and we'll give folks a second if they want to do that. Otherwise, I have more questions for you, Steve.
Okay.
Have no fear. Okay, well, now I'm going to ask another question. So one of the things that's really interesting about the YouTube community, and, oh, wait, somebody's coming in. Hello? Okay. One of the things that's very interesting to me about the YouTube community is this phenomenon of people who have built gigantic audiences of their own, right? And, you know, they're sort of semi-celebrities, right? When they post a video, they get hundreds of thousands of views. They have tens of thousands of subscribers. Could you say a little bit about that phenomenon? How does YouTube relate to those people? Because some of them obviously have some kind of relationship now where YouTube is placing ads on their sites. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, given that they have such big organic audiences on the site, how do you suggest politicians relate to them? This is sort of like, how should a politician relate to a popular blogger? The same sort of thing. I mean, are they radioactive? Do they like being pitched? You know, what do you think works? What have you seen?
Well, I think it's widely variable. First off, the way that YouTube handles these YouTube celebrities is we essentially make them partners, and we have a whole partner program here that vets their content, ensures that we can run ads against it, and fires away on that front. So there are YouTubers that literally make their entire year's salary off of posting YouTube videos, and if you're really popular, someone like Michael Buckley over at What the Buck, you make, you know, over 100K a year on YouTube videos. But you know, that's what he does all day, is he produces these things. I think for politics and for campaigners looking at accessing this crowd, I mean, you need to find somebody that who's you're comfortable with interacting. But there is a hugely untapped resource here to dive into, and I think messaging people directly and asking for their help, you'd be surprised what you hear back. I think a lot of people on YouTube who have these audiences, they want to make it big. They want the chance to work for something that's outside of just their own bedroom blog. And if you find somebody whose image or demographic or message resonates with your campaign, it's the same thing as calling up, you know, Charlie Gibson, but in the online world, because these people have that level of influence on YouTube. And I think you'd be surprised if many people would be interested. This video volunteers program we launched, this is an example. It's been amazing to see how many really popular YouTube users are really interested in working with nonprofits and who want to do something that goes outside of their own sphere but just don't actually have that opportunity and don't know how to seek it out. So I would say find somebody, hang on.
David Baker is asking, is there a way to basically pay, you know, to advertise onto one of those YouTube partners? I mean, in effect, borrowing their audience.
Oh, right. You know, we haven't launched it yet, but I think we are... In fact, I'm sure we're working towards actually being able to target a particular video with an ad. But for PYV, I think you could, you know, go in there and if you want to, let's say Lisa Nova, who's a big YouTube celebrity, let's say you want to PYV her. Just like anybody else, you can buy off that keyword. So if you want to make sure that you end up in the search results pages for Lisa Nova, just go in there and put your spend against those keywords. And, yeah, you definitely can PYV against them. The other thing you can do is, you know, you can make your video or apply video to one of theirs so it shows up underneath theirs on watch pages and gets more views.
Is there any way, I mean, if I wanted to find a list of the top 100 producers on YouTube, how would I do that? I mean, is there, you know, one of my complaints about YouTube is it's this unbelievable universe, but there's no map.
Yeah.
And there are reasons why you don't necessarily want to create leaderboards. I mean, they have their own distorting effects. But, you know, other than sort of sitting there and doing lots of searches and building something by hand, how would somebody go about doing this?
You would go, so you would use browse. And, you know, I tend to agree with your criticism. I mean, it is challenging sometimes to find things on YouTube. But you can use our browse functionality to find the most viewed channels. So... Mm-hmm. You go to the channels tab on YouTube and then start digging down by the different verticals and then, you know, filtering out by most viewed. You can start to find out who the most viewed channels are. And we don't differentiate between YouTube user partners versus just regular partners versus just regular users, but It's not too hard to differentiate who's who once you start doing that kind of filtering. So I'd recommend that browse experience is probably your best way to target some of the more popular YouTubers that you wanna be in touch with. And then also, you know, search. You can search by channels too. So if I want to just search politics by channel or something, I can start to see channels that are related to politics and go from there.
And in terms of how people tend to respond, I mean, is there any good advice on the best way to approach folks, or roughly the same thing you would tell people about pitching bloggers?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, leave a comment on their most recent video. The really popular YouTube users are on top of their comments like a legislator on top of correspondence. Like, they look at it all day long. And the other way is to use the internal email system. And then pitching them is, I think, just the same as, yeah, pitching anybody. It's like, hey, look, this is our cause. We're big fans. A lot of these YouTube users who are doing well on the site are really starving for an audience, and they're using this new technology to find people who are interested in their content because they're not part of the more mainstream media outlets. So they're looking for these kinds of opportunities, and, you know, if you can find somebody who matches, then it's totally worth your time.
Right. I've noticed that comment threads on YouTube videos can be pretty, chaotic. Video comments still seem like a fairly open territory. Like, if you know, typically you'll see thousands of comments on a popular video and maybe dozens of video comments. So would you say that if you're any good at making video, you should focus more of your energy on making video comments than posting little text comments?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the barrier to entry is much higher for a video comment, but if the person who has made the video accepts it, then it is a much better way to reach an audience. And, you know, the thing about comments is they are chaotic, and frankly, there are a lot of comments that are just completely inane and useless, but if you actually make a good comment, it's going to stand out from the rest. And, you know, we now have this voting system on comments is trying to help raise the best ones to the top. And so, you know, I think the other thing to think about with comments is if you're posting videos and you're trying to think, well, what kind of a discussion do I want to create, and you're able to stay on top of it, you might want to consider moderating your comments pretty consistently so that you can keep that discussion going in a way that feels, useful. Because, you know, just sort of part of the phenomenon of the Internet is that you're going to get a lot of people who are just, you know, typing to hear themselves type and aren't necessarily adding value to the conversation.
Right.
But I would say that if you don't enable comments on a video, it's seen within the YouTube universe as a pretty big stiff arm. So I would try to avoid that at all costs.
Pause here in case somebody wants to jump in with their own question. And I'll keep going. Another question I have is just the amount of time it takes to tend a channel. I mean, you know, you obviously have a lot of members of Congress now, have created their own YouTube channels, seem to be uploading videos on a regular pace. But, you know, what kind of time commitment do you think an organization like a congressional office or, you know, a mid-sized nonprofit with 30, 40, 50 employees, I mean, what do we, you know, you have said you need to keep a fairly consistent eye. So what sort of time commitment do you think is reasonable?
Well, I think there's one differentiation that's worth making, and it's that of uploading videos versus tending to a channel. And, I think YouTube's channel infrastructure, the channel page, so, for example, youtube.com/citizentube, is not anywhere near the same kind of traffic driver as, say, a Facebook profile. People just don't look at channel pages nearly as often as they just find videos. So you're much more better off spending your time, make sure you continue to upload videos than doing much with your channel in terms of graphics or maintenance or moderating things there. So just getting videos up is important. And I'd say, you know, depending on how much time it takes to shoot and edit and everything, you want to spend probably like an hour a day, maybe, getting it up onto the site and monitoring it throughout the day. It's one of those things to sort of keep open in your browser throughout the day and check in on. I think an hour a day is enough, and even if, you know, you have less time than that, if you're uploading three videos a week, you know, an hour a day for those 3 days is important. The other thing to know about the channel infrastructure is that it is actually changing. Just about a week ago, we launched a new channel type on YouTube that is designed to try to help people stay on channels longer and interact with a particular content owner more effectively. So you can now kind of browse videos within a channel. You can stay there. You can look at someone's favorites. And it is moving more towards the model that that Facebook has for their profiles in terms of being able to stay within someone's universe and explore them more distinctly. So think about using playlists on your channel around different topics. Think about aggregating other people's videos that resonate with your cause into playlists there, and giving people an option of what to click through once they find your identity on YouTube is really smart.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the dark side.
All right.
Opposition work, right? I mean, we also see a lot of campaigns now, the Macaca moment being exemplary, sending people out to track their opponent. Let's talk about this more from the defensive point of view, right? I mean, what do you recommend a organization or a politician do to kind of watch out for problems? Do they have to have a staffer, like, you know, checking every couple hours to see if something damaging has been uploaded? Or should they just wait until somebody calls them and says, have you seen that video of you leaving that motel? What do you recommend? What do you see people doing?
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, you should definitely stay on top of what's taking place on YouTube. So continuing to search your candidate's name, setting up the RSS feed for your candidate's name on your as a search term is really smart, just so you stay on top of what the discussion is there. The other thing I'd say is you can, if the quote-unquote, it depends what the gotcha footage is. If it's coming out of a hotel, I think you're probably just screwed, right? But if it's, you know, hey, can
I exactly use those words, but okay.
Fair enough, you're in trouble. But if the gotcha footage, so to speak, is more about, you know, hey, this is a position of candidate X, and you think it's being taken out of context, you can preempt a little bit of that by just uploading footage from your candidate talking about their position on every issue right away. So, like, don't waste any time letting your candidate get out there on every issue, even if it's just like a short 1-minute summary of their position. Get it on the site and tag it with every possible keyword that is related to that issue, and then if, say, your opponent uploads a video that you think takes your position on that issue out of context, then go back into your own video and change the keywords around to match the keywords on their video so that when someone's searching for that issue in your candidate's name and they find the opposing video on it, they're also going to find yours. So don't think of your video as a static thing that you put up and then you never change. Like, you can go back to the same video and retweak your strategy to help people find it based on what's bubbling on the site.
Mm-hmm. Did you see in the last election, I mean, in terms of the practices of candidates, campaigns around this, I mean, what you just described is one technique that obviously mm-hmm. some campaigns did more than others. Mm-hmm. So devil's advocate, what if you don't bother? You know, I mean, one could argue that, if you look at the number of videos put up by McCain's campaign compared to the number put up by Obama, the McCain campaign kind of looked at YouTube and said, you know, they weren't going to worry about it. And they, you know, had 20% the number of views that Obama did. But can we, you know, the devil's advocate might say, big deal. You know, it didn't decide the election for them either way.
Sure. Yeah, I would never say that YouTube decides the election for any one candidate. What it does do is, in a huge way, influence the daily conversation around the issues in a campaign in a way that reverberates beyond just YouTube. Mm-hmm. So the phenomenon of what takes place on YouTube isn't just that, you know, this video of McCain uploaded singing Bomb Bomb Iran, but it's that then the mainstream media picks it up and plays it on television. So even if it's not festering on YouTube in the way that you talk about 20% of the view counts, It could be getting, you know, 150% of view counts on TV. So don't think about YouTube as just YouTube.com, but think about it as part of a larger media ecosystem.
Right.
If you don't have time or you don't want to bother with engaging directly on gotcha footage or something that takes place, that's one way to look at it, but you should have a strategy that takes the place of that one. So the McCain strategy that took the place of that one was, later in the summer, they started uploading really salacious and provocative ads comparing Obama to celebrities that did get millions of views on YouTube. So they took the idea of, like, look, let's play on the celebrity angle, put celebrities that are popular onto into our ads. And those ads, while they were played on TV, really had their peak on YouTube. So, you know, that's a different way to look at it.
Right. And then Paris Hilton responded, which...
Yeah, that didn't hurt.
We're getting close to the end of time. I want to ask you about legal issues. So, two types. The first one has to do with sort of protecting copyright and, you know, takedown notices and so on. Is there any advice you would give to people working in the political arena about how to relate to those kinds of issues? I mean, some people obviously are aggressive about, you know, sort of protecting copyright. Others have a laissez-faire attitude. What do you think, you know, as you said before, if you have comments shut off, you know, the YouTube community doesn't particularly like that. You know, where would you come down on this in terms of it advising somebody in the political arena?
Yeah, well, that's a tough question. I mean, the way that YouTube sits in this issue, and it really is fundamental to our entire ability to exist, is that we are a platform, and that under the DMCA law, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998, we have safe harbor from copyright violations, such that it's our responsibility to take a video down if a copyright claim is made, but we aren't sitting there looking at every video that comes onto YouTube and determining, you know, the veracity or the source of the content. And frankly, that's because it's just simply impossible to do. Now, when it comes to politics, you know, a lot of the times candidates want to post footage from their TV shows, from their appearances on popular cable networks, et cetera. And that's something that, you know, we sort of just say, look, that's, you do that kind of at your own peril. And we've seen a lot of political candidates, you know, get their footage claimed by networks and then taken down. That's sort of up to you. One of the things we've seen some campaigns do is we've seen them reach out to networks beforehand to get permission or to let them know that it's there. Mm. And a lot of times, too, if you get a copyright claim against your video on YouTube, it the claim actually isn't coming from a human being who found it and wanted to take it down, but it's from tools that different organizations employ to find their footage on YouTube and claim it. And so oftentimes you can file a counterclaim against the network that made a claim against your video and see if they'll revoke it. And if they realize, oh, wait, this is actually uploaded by, you know, this campaign or the senator and we don't mind in that case, then you might have luck. But, you know, we don't take any real position on this. The information I'm conveying to you now is just anecdotal based on what we've seen take place with political organizations. And, you know, the fair use cases are interesting. They're just not battles that we're fighting based on what our platform is.
And then lastly, if a candidate or politician or whatever has a channel, what are their legal responsibilities for the content on that channel, the comments, video or text comments and so on? Are there any differences here because they're building the channel on YouTube in terms of where that legal responsibility lies? Is it the same as, again, a blogger isn't legally responsible for the content of comments? Are we talking the same thing or are there differences here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you are, and I'm not, I should say right away here that I'm not a lawyer here at YouTube, so I can answer this to some extent, but you'll find out most information that's helpful for you in our terms of service on YouTube and in our community guidelines, which I would definitely recommend everyone take a look at. I mean, the content you put onto YouTube, you own it on the terms of service that you agree to when you sign up for an account. The discussion that takes place around it is a discussion that's native to YouTube, so the comments and et cetera are things that take place on our site. They're not attributed to you. They are just like comments on a blog, so think of it that way. But, you know, I think any particular legal questions, the best place to go is just to dive into the terms of service that you've signed and the community guidelines, and, you know, definitely hit me up if you have specific questions that I can help find better answers to.
And, again, your email is?
Grove@youtube.com.
Very good. Last chance for people on the call if anyone has a question. I'm going to leave the floor open for a few more seconds. A Quiet crowd today. All right. Well, that's fine. This is a really, really informative call, Steve. Fascinating. I'm looking forward to your panel at PDF next week. We'll be digging into some of the stuff. I'm looking forward to maybe you'll pop in on the Iran and social media lunchtime conversation that we've just added. It'd be great if you can throw some insight in there. Such an interesting time. And once again, thank you for your time. I want to thank AT&T and the Bivings Group for their sponsorship of the PDF Network calls. Appreciate everybody for joining us for the last hour. Remember, you'll be able to access the MP3 of this call as a podcast on personaldemocracy.com in our resources section. We will be posting a schedule of the next 3 months of calls that are coming up. We should have that up on the site pretty shortly. We'll get an email out to all the members of the PDF Network letting them know. Until then, it's been great spending the time together. Steve, see you soon. Travel safe. And everybody else, we'll see you on the call again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.